Hi everyone, and welcome to our weekly live. Coach Alina is with us, so welcome back.
Hi Danielle, it's a pleasure to be here again.
Super nice seeing you. And as we wait for some questions to drop in, I was asking you just beforehand if you know I could ask you to share a little bit of what's going on, sort of like personal slash professional, but really more professional. But you decided to focus full time on sleep coaching.
Yeah, I actually was for a very long time, around like 7 years, was working like full time in the agency and doing some marketing jobs and so on. And just recently, I made a decision to quit from that job and focus more on, you know, mostly coaching. And if there is some other like, you know, hobbies and stuff, then I would focus on that too. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That's super, super nice. Really amazing. And it's interesting how Beth said the same thing in a recent call. Coach Beth, for those of you who don't know her, and Joseph, who hasn't been a guest in a long time, so probably people don't know him, but it's so nice to see that more and more of us now are actually taking the leap and the step and doing this full time.
Yeah, it's thrilling. So I hope it will be, you know, you will have like less chance to kind of burn out, because you can also like manage your time better. And yeah, really looking forward to that. Yeah, but I'm also excited to start helping you out with the immunity program. This is something I think also nice to share as a new thing what's been happening. So I will be coaching with Coach Michelle, so I think it's going to be really, really nice.
Yeah, it's funny. I was, of course, thinking about this exact same thing to say next, that I mentioned it, I think, last Friday, but we can say again, this is another announcement. Coach Alina is joining our immunity program, and we actually have, so we kind of have two programs now for everyone to know that Coach Alina and Coach Michelle are hosting one, and me and Veronica are hosting another one. So super, super exciting times for us. And I think we have a few. Let's just jump in here and look at some questions actually right away. And if you're there live with us, you just feel free to ask more questions here. Firstly, we actually have just a good evening from Richard, who's saying, I'm doing better in bed. Have a question though, which we're waiting for. I think Richard is writing that, so we'll wait for that one. Filter Rich is here. Greeting coaches. Hello. And greetings to everyone in the chat. Very, very nice. All right. Let's look here. So Peace is with us and says, hi, Coach Daniel and Coach. I hope you're fine. Thank you so much. Things are getting easier to me after a whole year of recovery and 5 years of insomnia. But I know it is, but don't know if it's the end of the journey. It kind of ends there. What do you think when you hear this, Alina?
Yeah, I think actually I've been thinking about it like earlier today, about the whole like idea of defining where you are on the journey, as if there is a timeline, and then you kind of, you know, what the brain is trying to do like during insomnia is that it tries to predict or have some sense of control. So it's like I sometimes feel like it's tricky to even put yourself on the timeline and think of yourself as, you know, oh, I'm in the end, I'm in the middle, or at the beginning, because then it kind of, you know, for those who feel like they are in the end, they might start resisting certain experiences. For example, there is like a random, automatic thought appears, but then they think like, oh, but I'm not supposed to get that thought because I'm already at the end of the journey. I'm not supposed to experience that. And usually that kind of thinking, like, it's too, you know, how to say it, like, I should not be experiencing this. And this can play kind of like tricks on us. So I would say really the end of the journey, really, like, it looks like when you don't really care where you are on the journey. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's really when there is no kind of like, how to say, like thinking in terms of like where I am or trying to predict. It's more of really closing the whole kind of chapter with insomnia. So I'm not, you know, I'm not solving my sleep anymore. I'm just let, you know, the night unfold as it wants. And I'm just going to be there. I will do my best and let's see what happens. So I think this is the kind of like the eventual place. At least that's how it happened for me. For me, insomnia ended not when I realized, oh, okay, this is like the time for me to end, but it was more like, I don't care where I am on the journey. So I don't know if that made sense, but yeah.
It made 100% sense to me. And here's a nice one. I just want to share this one. Check this out.
Yeah, so nice.
Isn't that nice? Alina's incredible coach for me in bedtime. Thank you for everything. That's amazing. It's amazing. And I have another announcement. Anna is actually going to be a guest on our show. That's amazing. Oh, so nice you're here.
Well, it's so nice to, when people are coming back to tell their stories. It's so helpful. The contribution of just going there and just talking about your experience and giving others like hope and just like encouragement, it's so valuable.
I've heard that a lot of times. People have written me afterwards and I thanked them. Like, thanks so much for being a guest. And they were like, actually, this felt so good for me. Kind of, it was kind of like, you know, I'm smiling because of like, it's the end of the journey. It's kind of closing chapter, which we already said, like, it ends when we don't think about it, but it can be like a really nice way to kind of like, share and give back and can feel even meaningful. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. You said, I think I brought this up before, but Drew Linsalata from The Anxious Truth, he said something very, very similar when he was on a guest, that recovery to him was like when we no longer wonder if we're recovered or not, you know, very similar idea. Now, somebody who's listening to this may say like, hey, but Daniel, you have a whole roadmap and like you have these steps and everything. And yeah, it is a little paradoxical because on one hand, I think it is very, very true that we don't question where we are, then there is no struggle. On the other hand, like as coaches, you can also tell like, oh, this person is kind of very frazzled and confused and doesn't have much understanding. This person actually has quite a lot of understanding. So this person is probably closer to leaving the struggle. So there is, in a weird way, there is sort of like a progression, but it sort of ends when we don't look at it as a journey at all. It's a paradox, isn't it?
It is. And I think the thing about this kind of like roadmaps or timelines or having like certain stages is kind of like, it is so helpful in the, especially in the beginning, in terms of that it normalizes a lot of things. You know, when you experience, let's say, yo-yo pattern or something like this, it's so helpful just to see it's on the journey. It's not something that outside of like never happened to anyone. So actually like to have a roadmap for the sake of normalizing experiences and saying that this is okay to have, like, it, you know, it's understandable. It's very well explained and then there's no mystery about it. But at the same time, when we try to kind of like estimate where we are and we try to, you know, skip to the next step or never go back to the other, you know, like to the previous step, that's when it gets tricky. So I think it's like, I would say it's even helpful maybe to kind of like maybe instruct people how to use the roadmap or any sort of like idea like of steps, because it's helpful just to know that you're not alone. You're not struggling like with this and no one else have ever, you know, dealt with this. But at the same time, not measure your success by where you are right now, because it's really the journey. It can look like this, just jumps everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
It's normal at the same time. It's normal. It's not linear.
Very nice to say. And I'll take the advantage of saying, like, with this in mind, what Coach Alina just said, feel free to download the roadmap. It's in the description of every video, but keep everything in mind as you look at it. Okay, very nice. Let's take a look at a question from The Plug, who says, question, I suffer from anxiety, but I don't think about sleep or worry about it when I go to sleep, but I still manage to not get good sleep. Okay, so I think the question is here is that, but I don't think about sleep or worry about it. So I'm not really, you know, I have some anxiety, you know, I have had kind of a history with struggling with anxiety, but now I'm noticing that even if I'm not particularly worried or thinking about sleep, I can still have a choppy night. I think that's the question here. But Alina, what do you think when you hear this?
I would say it might not always manifest itself. The hyperarousal might not always manifest itself as anxiety, meaning that we are like kind of afraid of what will happen next night. It might be even curiosity, like, why is that happening? So it's like even questioning, like, this is strange, this is not normal, can be already a form of that, the feature of our brain to problem solve. So it kind of detects like, oh, something is, you know, going on with your sleep, you need to solve it. And it might, it doesn't have to feel like anxiety all the time. But if this anxiety or whatever, like the feeling or worry is not related to sleep and it's something about like work or anything else, I think, first of all, in general, when we try to even suppress the worry itself, like we are trying to fight with the feeling, it can be a bit counterproductive. But at the same time, for example, I know that there is one kind of like approach, which I think in terms of non-sleep related worry, it can be so helpful, is this constructive worry method, where if something bothers us, let's say some problem at work or in the relationship or anything else, then just kind of like writing down like what is the next step we are going to do about it, and kind of like show the brain that you're going to take a look at it, but not now, you're not going to solve it now. So the brain kind of gets a little bit of like, okay, you are listening, right? So it kind of backs off. So I would say this, I would say like even like to try to Google this method, like constructive worry method, it's quite helpful for, again, for not sleep related worry, because when we try to problem solve this way, you know, in terms of like sleep, then it gets tricky. But overall, I think just knowing that, you know, sometimes it's just like curiosity can make sleep a bit more elusive. So, and again, normalizing the feelings, the emotions that we have, and not resisting the experiences can be really helpful in that.
Absolutely, well said. And I refer that to like the wonder wall, where like, I'm not anxious, I just wonder why I don't sleep. Well, the wondering can itself be the explanation. And what else? Oh yeah, forecasting too. Sometimes when we forecast, we're like, oh, I didn't worry about sleep the whole day, so now I'll probably sleep really well. Then we have like created this forecasting, this prediction, which itself creates some kind of like, oh, will it happen or not? So those two things came to mind. Now, Anna actually had a question for us. Let's check it out. Anna says, what do you think about when we have our own anecdotal evidence that not sleeping leads to getting sick? I know there's no evidence for this, but it's something I've noticed. Very interesting. So Anna kind of like has this experiential thing and has some internal evidence that maybe this is true or not. But what do you think when you hear this, Alina?
But I would maybe like inquire a little bit what it means like to lead to getting sick, in what term and what kind of, like, let's say if like I didn't sleep much and then the next day I got the flu or something. But also again, like there is like the how that connection was established, you know, also could be questioning how we arrived to that knowledge. Because sometimes a lot of things can be uncovered by questioning, okay, how did I arrive to that conclusion? So, I mean, just generally knowing that, let's say if I remember how I was afraid of getting sick, like, because I, you know, you read all this kind of scary information that, oh, if you don't sleep, then your, I don't know, your immune system is compromised and things like that. And that was like, you know, there were moments when I could like just once per year or something, I would just, you know, get the flu or something. But it was, for me, it's really hard to trace it to actual sleep rather than it's just something that, you know, comes, you know, all those kind of like forces come together. You just create like, you know, like the let's say like flu or common cold or something like this. So I don't know. I was just maybe just try to ask myself.
I think when I hear this, I think like this, that Anna probably got the flu one time or got a cold, and it also happened to be when she hadn't slept much, and now like there's this connection in the brain that this is evidence, this shows that it's true that if I don't sleep much I will get a cold. And so how do we approach it when sort of those connections have happened in our brain? To me, I think it's kind of an invitation to just see how the brain works. It loves making connections, and that's, I mean, evolutionary speaking, it's like, it makes perfect sense. Like if there's a weird sound in the grass and we saw like, I don't know, a tiger, then we want to think like that sound in the grass means tiger. That's a safety thing. That's what the brain is still trying to do. Mm-hmm. And then when we kind of uncover that, we can just be like, aha, I see what you're trying to do, brain. Like, I know what you're doing. Like, and that's, you know, thanks for having me back. And then I think the second thing to me is becomes like, if we then try to like disprove it, or we're like, but now I'm going to teach you that that's not true, then we can have some internal struggle again. So I think it's again about like just seeing what's happening and not, you know, not trying to fight or something like that. But does that make sense to
you? Also, like the reverse, also kind of finding evidence of that not being true in terms of like, okay, does every time there is sleeplessness, we are getting sick? Does it always happen? Because
right.
it's not like, it could be just like a coincidence or something like this, you know? So I was just, in general, like, you know, when we are talking about like connection sleep and let's say tiredness sleep and I don't know, whatever it is, it's not only like helpful to just to see, okay, does it always having a sleepless night like leads to getting sick, or the opposite? Like, does it mean that if we always have perfect sleep, we will never get sick? Because this year I got sick as well, and no sleep struggles, but still, like I was like, you know, I had health issues. So it's
absolutely the detective work, I call that, what you just shared, which is really can be really helpful. Oh, here is Richard had a question. Where did it go? Okay, here it is. Here's Richard's question. Richard says, how do you delegate without substances? Is there a kind of ritual substitute? Wow, this is a really kind of like very insightful question. This is, I can sell it. Richard has a kind of deep knowledge of our content here. And I can go first and if this one, because this is kind of one of my favorite topics. So delegation, for anyone that's tuning in here, what are we talking about? What is that? Well, it's basically when, to me, it's where I go to explain how sleeping pills, quote unquote, work. Because on one hand, we teach that nothing in the universe can actually make us sleep except our own body, that sleep drive, that need for sleep that our body can have. So when you hear that, you may be like, so how is it that when I take this pill, I always sleep? Well, two things are happening when we take something. One is that some chemical is dispersed in our body. And the other thing is that we are aware of taking something. And then if we are aware of taking something and we think, oh, this will take care of sleep for me, I don't have to do anything further, guess what? We have become effortless. We're not trying to sleep at all. And then sleep happens by itself, because it does that when we're not trying to make it happen. So this is what I call delegation. So delegation is kind of the magic that can make it look like things make us sleep, whether it's a pill or a couch or anything else. Now, Richard is saying like, okay, now if I understand this and I want to delegate to like something else, I don't want to delegate to a pill, should I just have some kind of like a token? Or should I delegate to this other thing instead? And I would say this, that when we're thinking about delegating to a substance like a medication, what the teaching is really about is seeing that it's the delegation that's magical, or like the effortlessness that's magical. But really what made us sleep was kind of like our body, our brain. So what we can do is just kind of substitute for our brain or ourselves, or say like, okay, I'm delegating this to my body, or I'm delegating this to my brain, or something like that. And I think that leads us to a place where we don't need a token or a substitute. We're just delegating to nothing, or ourselves, or our brain, or something like that is where I go when I hear this. But does that make sense, Alina?
Yeah, this is perfect. I exactly like was thinking about that. It's just like the best way to delegate is to delegate to the one who is actually doing the job, which is the body. And I would say that this way we are not going to be dependent on anything external, in terms of like, we are not going to be fearful if we don't do a certain ritual, then we are not going to sleep, but more about like, okay, my body knows how to sleep and it will sleep at the right time. So I'm just gonna, you know, allow it to happen naturally. So.
Very, very nice. Let's see. We have looked at this Richard says, I'm delegating this to my body and my brain. Sounds very, very nice. All right. Eddie's with us and says, I've been having a few speed bumps every few days the past month, but you guys have helped tremendously. Thank you guys so much for what you do. Wonderful. That's amazing. Just somebody sharing that. So, so nice.
Yeah.
All right. Jasvi is here. Says, hello, sir. My mind becomes rigid during falling asleep, and it doesn't let sleep happen. For my mind, falling asleep means losing control or going into unknown territory, something my mind doesn't know. Very, very insightful question again here. Let's read it one more time. My mind becomes rigid during falling asleep and doesn't let sleep happen. To my mind, falling asleep means losing control. Yes, I think I understand this one now. What do you think when you hear this, Lina?
I think, first of all, it's kind of like, you know, logical from the point of view how the brain works. The brain kind of really doesn't like uncertainty, unknown, things that are kind of like it doesn't have control over. So that's the thing, like it is kind of expected, not in the way that, you know, like the you know, happens to, like should be happening to everyone, but sometimes the brain can detect like, oh, I realize that I'm not really in control when I'm asleep. So let me kind of like help you out with this. So it can become kind of like rigid or in terms of like, I usually call it automatic. So every time we feel like this kind of like clue that, okay, the body is transitioning to sleep, the brain once registers that, kind of like, oh, wait, be careful. That's a dangerous zone or something like this. So in itself, sleep is harmless. Obviously, it's our natural body function. And the brain needs to also learn that as well. And the way how we can help the brain to learn that, first of all, maybe just learning more about sleep itself so that the thing that's been unknown becomes more familiar, so that we are, it's the same education, but more to like turned not towards like how insomnia works, how, you know, it prevents sleep from happening, but also how sleep works itself, so that there is less mystery about it. And then the second thing would be more like view that moment when this emotional kind of like response to falling asleep happens, view it as something that as a programmed response from the brain that is designed to keep you safe. So in itself, that response is not something bad, not something that we need to, you know, be afraid of or try to avoid, but something that is just there for now. And our reaction to that particular experience, to that reaction, can actually teach the brain to feel more at peace, more safe, even if it happens. And what usually happens is that when we are not resisting that experience, or like, let's say that awareness that we are falling asleep and being scared because of that, when we take it as something, oh, okay, here's it's coming and so on. So we are not really resisting that. That's when at some point, the brain might kind of like miss that moment when the sleep happens. So it's like we are just smoothly transitioned to sleep. And yeah, then sleep just happens. And then we wake up after some amount of time. So yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very nicely said. And to me, like as I was reading through this, like a second time, I realized, okay, I think this is what, I think to me, this was like, in my mind, I went like, aha, this is a somniphobia question. This is a question about somebody who is becoming scared of the fact that falling asleep is out of our control. We don't have control when we're asleep. We're kind of offline. And just like for you, Ojasvi, we have some content on somniphobia here. But I will say like just quick, a little retrospection here. When I first heard somebody describe this, I was kind of like, oh, this is just a version of insomnia. But in reality, it's not quite the same, because like what's scary with insomnia is actually being awake. When it comes to somniphobia, this is like what appears scary is kind of not having control or actually sleeping. But it's always the same thing. It's just like our brain can identify all kinds of things as dangerous, like not sleeping or sleeping, like both can appear dangerous to the brain. And the way to meet this is exactly like you said, I think, like education and then allowing ourselves to feel scared when we feel scared, etc. But yeah, just adding a little comments to that. Now, we actually had a specific question to you, Alina.
Okay.
And it's from Jacob, who says, hi, Alina. What you say about eventually not caring about it anymore because you're just so exhausted with the battle really resonates with me. Is it just a matter of time to when that happens? I feel like sometimes I truly am ready to surrender, but I will fall back into the trap. How do I overcome this hurdle? And I'm smiling because we talked about timeline and time in the beginning of this. But yeah, Alina, what do you, question for you here?
I think it's really insightful question because, you know, the fact that exactly when we are not caring also means that we are kind of like surrendering the fight. And when we see that, I mean, this moment can be a little bit maybe kind of sad, or, you know, this kind of like not particularly happy one, but at the same time, there might be certain sense of relief in a weird way, but it's kind of like, it does feel like that when we are about to kind of like just give up. Usually it happens sometimes like at the end of the night or after we've been in the pattern for a very long time. But now when it comes to this kind of time, I would say that time alone, just if we are just saying like, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, tolerate that, you know, without kindness, without like being willing to look under the hood if there is some certain like...
Oh, wait, Alina, I think your mic, something happened to your microphone. Can you try to unmute it?
Hey, is it
good? Man, I can't hear you. This is, let me, oh, can I edit your mic settings? No. Yeah, maybe try to jump off and come back again. Try that, Alina, and we'll see. Hopefully that will resolve this. Wow. What do I do now? Just wait for Alina. But yes, I think, oh, we can hear. Oh, you can hear. It's just me. I can't hear. Okay. Well, she'll be back in a second. In the meantime, I'll just say to Vigo that yes, you can. Just, you know, be kind and nice. Hi again. Can you say something?
Do you hear me?
All right. So this is odd, but apparently the audience can hear you, but I can't hear you.
Okay.
You can just like, you know, finish your thoughts on that and then we'll kind of improvise after this.
Yeah, I think I was telling about the timing and things. So time alone, it kind of like in itself, just waiting out does not necessarily need to solve things. It is more like combination of understanding what is happening when we are experiencing it and just also at the same time providing like, you know, self-compassion and kindness towards ourselves that can all together can be really kind of helpful and can help to complete this journey. Even like when we said about this kind of completion, when it's usually like, you know, abandoning the whole journey. But I would say definitely some time needs to be passed, but time like just waiting out might be a little bit, might not be fully enough. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it's also about like understanding. Every time there is emotion arises and then we say, okay, I know what it is. Okay, it can be here. I don't mind it. So that kind of like time passing that is helpful, but not in terms of like, I'm just going to wait it out the storm because it might turn into avoidance. I don't know if that made sense.
I can't hear you, but I can tell by kind of your body language that you finalized that.
Okay.
What you said. So I think I'll just answer this because when you were gone, somebody named Vega asked if you could ask about somebody else. And I said, sure. So I'll just answer this one from Vegas. He said, you had a guy named Carl Mercieca on his channel. Carl is in a very bad state as of late. His medication is no longer working. He thinks he's dying. What do you think is wrong with Carl, Daniel? You know, of course, firstly, I want to say that I never any like medical advice or anything from here. I'm just kind of sharing my general thoughts. And I would say that to me, insomnia is, I like to say this, that everyone, all of us humans, we're unique. Everyone is unique and special, but insomnia is not unique and special. It's really always the same. And when somebody thinks, for example, somebody thinks that if I'm not sleeping, that means I'm really, really sick. Something's really wrong with me. That, of course, makes us scared. And as part of alertness, as part of being scared, we become more awake. And then if we think that that means something is wrong with us, you can see how this becomes a loop. And when medications appear to be like not working, to me, it just means that we are so scared that even like sedation, it doesn't affect us. We're like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So Carl has been a guest on the channel and, you know, when he was a guest in our channel, his story sounded very, very familiar to, you know, all the other stories we have. So I'll just say, I hope he's okay. And, hope he finds, you know, a nice way out of the struggle there. But yeah, with that said, we'll conclude our broadcast here. It was a little odd technical glitch here, but hopefully it doesn't happen again. If it does, we'll have to fix it. But thanks for jumping on here, Alina.
Thank you for inviting. Okay, okay. Bye.
Bye, everyone.